produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, artists, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, stash.normal.org. And continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. Visit www.redaphid.com. It's Monday, May 12th. And it's 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Don't forget to call your Congress at 202-224-3121 and tell your representative to support Barney Frank's H.R. 5843 bill that would legalize marijuana for personal use. Ending prohibition starts with you. For our political activism day today, we're heading on down to California to speak with Dale Gehringer, the executive director of California Normal. Dale's got some updates on an upcoming vote to restrict marijuana growing in Mendocino County and the status of a bill to protect medical marijuana patients in the workplace. For our musical break today, I'm giving Cannabis Carrie a break because today is my youngest brother's 25th birthday. So today, Josh Belville, my non-cannabis-smoking little brother, is our featured artist, and I'm playing a song he wrote because of a specific request from me, his pothead older brother, for a groovy tune about weed smoking. Josh comes through for all of us with a dance song called Get Stoned Together. To conclude our stash, we go across the continent to Rhode Island to speak with Jesse Stout from the Rhode Island Patients Advocacy Coalition. Jesse's got updates on the twin bills in the House and Senate that would legalize medical marijuana dispensaries in that state. And remember, if you're a business or nonprofit who'd like your message heard on the Daily Audio Stash or the Normal Weekly News, you can advertise with us. We have rates for every budget and a 10% discount for nonprofits. You can target your message to the focused audience of enlightened cannabis consumers that you're looking for. With over 28,000 daily downloads and hundreds of thousands of embedded players on websites worldwide, advertising with Normal is the most effective way of reaching your potential customers. Just send us an email at stash@normal.org, and we'll have you on the air in no time. So sit back and relax with a good friend and your favorite strain. It's time for your Normal Daily Audio Stash. Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. Young woman murdered after cops use her in an undercover cocaine and gun deal. Tallahassee, Florida, from the Tallahassee Democrat. Rachel Morningstar Hoffman, age 23, a 2007 Florida State University graduate, was found dead in rural Taylor County early Friday after two men suspected in her kidnapping and robbery led investigators to her body. Murder charges are pending, according to the Tallahassee Police Department. Hoffman was last seen Wednesday night near Forest Meadows Park while attempting to assist Tallahassee Police Department vice investigators by buying drugs and a gun from the two men. When Hoffman agreed to help police, she was facing multiple felony charges and was in a diversion program after being caught with more than 20 grams of marijuana, Chief Dennis Jones said in a news conference Friday. Hoffman was facing charges of possession of ecstasy with intent to sell, possession of a controlled substance with intent to sell, maintaining a drug house, and possession of drug paraphernalia, Jones said. She agreed to buy 1,500 pills of ecstasy, 2 ounces of cocaine or crack cocaine, and a gun from two men, Andrea J. Green and Danilio Bradshaw, Jones said. Tallahassee Police Department spokesman David McCraney would not say whether Hoffman was wearing a wire, but another of Hoffman's friends, Shayna Hale, recalls Hoffman saying that police wanted her to do so. Police did not say why Hoffman was doing the bust, but McCraney said she was not coerced and helped willingly. Hale and other friends said they think police scared Hoffman into thinking she was going to spend years in prison for the felony charges if she didn't become an informant. Here at Normal, we have a saying that marijuana is not fatal, but its prohibition can be. Paramilitary SWAT raids terrorize and sometimes kill cannabis users, and sometimes non-users, when officers accidentally get the wrong address on a warrant. Or, as in this case, a cannabis user is flipped into becoming an informant in order to avoid lengthy prison time. In this case, we have a young woman who was caught twice with less than 1 ounce of cannabis and some ecstasy pills. Police then press her to give the names of these two dealers and to go make a deal, trying to parlay the little fish pot dealer into a bigger fish coke dealer. Now, do you think these guys might figure something is up when a small-time marijuana and club drug user suddenly wants to get a gun, some coke, and dealer amounts of pills? And to meet in a public park? The most shameful thing is the Tallahassee police trying to pin the blame of her death on her shoulders because she left the park, not because they put a naive young woman into a high-stakes drug sting and then lost track of her when she left with the two coke dealers.
We pleaded with her not to leave. She was able to leave before we could stop her and decided to meet them on her own.
Why did she leave? Were they not coming there, or did they tell her to meet somewhere else? Is that why?
Yeah, they had asked her to meet somewhere else.
Where?
I don't think we will disclose the location just yet.
Why didn't the police follow her?
Attempts were made, but again, we had a team in place to keep her safe at that location, and it did not entail, it was not predicted that she would leave from that location. That was not part of the plan.
The death of Rachel Hoffman just once again illustrates why it is so important that we end adult marijuana prohibition, especially for small personal amounts. Barney Frank's H.R. 5843 would make it legal to possess up to 3.5 ounces of marijuana, far less than what Rachel was caught with, leading to her having to become an informant to try to save herself from some prison time. Next president might be gentler on pot clubs. Ever since California voters became the first in the nation to legalize medical marijuana in 1996, the state has faced unyielding opposition from the federal government, which insists it has the power to prohibit a drug it considers useless and dangerous. That could all change with the next presidential election. As the candidates prepare for a May 20th primary in Oregon, one of the 12 states with a California-style law, Senator Barack Obama of Illinois has become an increasingly firm advocate of ending federal intervention and letting states make their own rules when it comes to medical marijuana. His Democratic rival, Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton of New York, is less explicit, recently softening a pledge she made early in the campaign to halt federal raids in states with medical marijuana laws. But she has expressed none of the hostility that marked the response of her husband's administration to California's initiative, Proposition 215. Senator John McCain of Arizona, the Republican nominee in waiting, has gone back and forth on the issue, promising a medical marijuana patient at one campaign stop that seriously ill patients would never face arrest under a McCain administration, but ultimately endorsing the Bush administration's policy of federal raids and prosecutions. Senator Obama seems to understand that there is legitimate medical use for marijuana, comparing doctor-prescribed morphine to doctor-recommended marijuana. Senator Clinton seems to have waffled a bit, saying first that the DEA raids in medical marijuana states should end, but later saying instead that DEA raids shouldn't be a, quote, high priority, end quote, which leaves the possibility open that the DEA raids would be some priority to a lesser extent. She also seems unaware of marijuana's proven medicinal benefits, calling for more research, despite the dozens of studies that have confirmed marijuana as medicine. And Senator McCain has flip-flopped numerous times on this issue, telling one patient he'd never be arrested for using medical marijuana, but then stating that he would not end the DEA raids in medical marijuana states. The U.S. role in a Mexico assassination, from the Wall Street Journal. American nonchalance about drug use stands in sharp contrast to what is happening across the border in Mexico. There, lawmen are taking heavy casualties in a showdown with drug-running crime syndicates. On Thursday, the chief of the Mexican Federal Police, Edgar Milan Gomez, was assassinated by men waiting for him when he came home, becoming the latest and most prominent victim of the syndicates. It's no secret that the narcotics trade is like a roach infestation. If you see one shipment or dealer, you can be sure that there are many others that go undetected. The signs of an infestation are everywhere, making a joke of their 40-year claim that any day now they will wipe out American drug use. Yet, if prohibitionists should find this lack of results troubling, imagine how Mexico must view it. That country doesn't even produce cocaine, but it became a transit route to the U.S. when enforcers had some success in curtailing supplies coming through the Caribbean in the late 1990s. That success didn't change the U.S. appetite for the mind-altering substances. Instead, drugs started flowing over land routes and Mexican cartels took charge. Now they are rumored to be in control of most of the traffic from the Andes northward. A U.S.-Mexican joint assessment estimates that more than $10 billion in cash from drug sales flow from the U.S. to Mexico every year. The upshot? Americans underwrite Mexico's vicious, organized crime syndicates. The gringos get their drugs, and the Mexican mafia gets weapons, technology, and the means to buy off or intimidate anyone who gets in their way. Caught in the middle is a poor country striving to develop sound institutions for law enforcement. Most of the drug-related killings since Mexican President Felipe Calderón took office seem to be the result of battles between rival cartels. Still, the escalating violence is troubling. The official death toll attributable to organized crime since the Calderón crackdown began now stands at 3,995. Of that, 1,170 have died this year. Especially alarming are the number of assassinations among military personnel and municipal, state, and federal police officers. The total is 439 for the 17 months and 109 so far this year. Many of these victims have been ordinary police officers whose refusal to be bought off or back off cost them their lives. But as the murder of Police Chief Milan makes clear, high rank offers no safety. 2 weeks before he was gunned down, Roberto Velasco, the head of the Organized Crime Division of the Federal Police, was shot in the head. 11 federal law enforcement agents have been killed in ambushes and executions in the past 4 weeks alone. If U.S. law enforcement agencies were losing their finest at such a rate, you can bet Americans would give greater thought to the violence generated by high demand and prohibition. Our friends in Mexico deserve equal consideration. Well, you know, here in America, one of the saddest consequences of the war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs is the erosion of support for law enforcement in the eyes of the young. Older folks tell me of a day when they knew the beat cop who patrolled their neighborhood, and young people would turn to that officer in times of trouble. Now, people my age and younger have a distrust for police, especially in minority neighborhoods, seeing law enforcement officers as them against us. No responsible cannabis consumer with any sense hates the police. In fact, most of us would prefer to be able to call police in times of crisis and not fear that being caught with the so-called controlled substance would land us prison time. It is unknown how many burglaries or assaults go unreported because the victim is a marijuana user afraid of punishment, but anecdotally I can relate many such occurrences from my friends and family. Also, we want police and the public to be safe as well. We see no reason why a peace officer needs to put his or her life on the line busting marijuana growers who must protect their crops with guns since growers can't turn to police or courts to handle their marijuana thefts. We see no reason why the public should face the danger of serious crimes not being responded to because an officer is too busy busting a young person with a baggie of pot. All marijuana prohibition does is takes a popular activity and adds in violence, profit, and corruption, while not decreasing the popular activity one iota.
Marijuana is an addictive drug which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death.
Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind.
If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face to face with the monster of marijuana, he would drop dead from fright.
Turn back effort to disguise an illegal drug as medicine. Now, I caught this opinion piece in one of the Minnesota papers as they're discussing medical marijuana legislation. This comes from one of the heads of the police chief lobby.
The organizations that represent Minnesota's police chiefs, sheriffs, county attorneys, police officers, and narcotics investigators are united in opposition to legislation that would authorize the use of marijuana for medical purposes. The adoption of this legislation will pose numerous problems for Minnesota's law enforcement officials and will endanger the public safety.
Translation? We won't be able to rip up any plant we see and jail every stoner we catch. We might have to investigate and do some paperwork.
In its raw form, marijuana is a dangerous drug and is not a medicine.
Dangerous in that it has never killed anyone? Not a medicine because millions of people over 5,000 years of history have used it to treat nausea, pain, spasticity, cramps, anxiety, depression, glaucoma, seizures, wasting syndromes, post-traumatic stress, and more?
While the pro-marijuana lobby will vigorously refute this fact, citing selective bits of information from inconclusive research, they fail to mention that many professional medical organizations, including those representing the patients proponents say need it most, like the National Multiple Sclerosis Society, the American Academy of Ophthalmology, and the American Cancer Society, do not support the medical use of marijuana.
And yet, many medical organizations do, such as the American College of Physicians and many others.
Currently, medical researchers and scientists are conducting studies to determine if certain properties of marijuana may be suitable for medical treatment of illnesses or ailments, which can be refined for safe pharmaceutical distribution. One such drug, Marinol, is currently available in pill form.
Strange, isn't it, how the free plant with 14% THC is a dangerous drug? But a 100% THC pill costing $20 a pop and making a profit for a pharmaceutical company is suitable for medical treatment of illnesses or ailments? Turns out that the pill isn't as useful as the raw plant as well, because the pill lacks cannabidiol, flavonoids, and terpenoids.
A 1999 landmark study of the Institute of Medicine found there is only anecdotal information on the medical benefits of smoked marijuana for some ailments, such as muscle spasticity. For other ailments, such as epilepsy and glaucoma, the study found no evidence of medical value and did not endorse further research.
Well then, you're not looking at the scores of studies that have shown evidence of medical value.
This study concluded that there is little future in smoked marijuana as a medically approved medication, because of the dangers of smoking a substance that contains many harmful substances.
Dangers which don't exist when cannabis is vaporized, or eaten, or given sublingually as a tincture.
Marijuana is also an addictive drug. According to the Minnesota Department of Human Services, 7,784 people who reported marijuana as their primary substance of abuse received addiction treatment in 2007. That was 16% of all treatment admissions in our state last year.
Yes, because close to 7,784 people were sentenced by a court to drug treatment when caught with cannabis. Nationally, only 7.3% of people who personally seek drug treatment, as opposed to being forced into it, are there for cannabis use. Of all the people in treatment for cannabis, only 16% put themselves there.
We are not bad guys. Our goal is to protect, not exploit our citizens. We are united in our belief that passage of this legislation will have negative consequences on our communities, our youth, and all our citizens. We are out in front telling you that this legislation is bad public policy. If you don't believe us, then just ask our colleagues in California or Oregon about the problems medical marijuana has caused for them. They will be glad to tell you.
Well, okay, I'm in Oregon. In both California and Oregon, teen use of marijuana has declined since medical marijuana passed in the 1990s. California has reaped an estimated $100 million per year in sales tax from the dispensaries. Thousands of dollars and police hours have been spared by not busting medical users of marijuana. Drug dealers' profit from marijuana has dropped as patients prefer to get cannabis legally from their own grower or a dispensary. Oregon helped balance their human services budget by taking $920,000 from the self-funded medical marijuana program. Law enforcement needs to look beyond their years of inculcation to the cult of reefer madness to realize that we have all been lied to about marijuana and its users for over 70 years now. Legalization for all users, healthy and sick, is the only rational public policy. Law enforcement's belief essentially boils down to, sorry, cancer and AIDS patients, you should suffer because some healthy person might try to get high. Well, I mean high from the wrong drug, of course. I doubt law enforcement has a problem with Minnesotans who drink vodka, and I doubt they wish to return to alcohol prohibition.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 12 states today, and THCF has medical clinics in 6 of those states. Our physicians help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help them obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, Colorado, Nevada, Hawaii, and California. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at www.hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
All right, we're going to turn to the Golden State now, over to the state of California, to find out what's happening with medical marijuana and other bills that are happening out there. We're joined by Dale Gehringer, the head of California Normal, on the telephone. Thanks for joining us, Dale.
Good to talk to you.
I see that we have one local measure here that we ought to tell people about in Mendocino County. Give our folks a little bit of a background on what the current law is there in Mendocino and the measure they're trying to get to overturn it.
Well, yes. The Board of Supervisors in Mendocino County is trying to repeal a path-breaking decriminalization initiative that was passed by the voters in 2000 called Measure G. That initiative made marijuana lowest enforcement priority in Mendocino County and specifically protected personal use of marijuana, including cultivation of up to 25 plants. And this was personal use in general. It wasn't restricted to medical marijuana. There's been a lot of brouhaha recently in the county over alleged abuses by commercial growers, basically, creating nuisances, environmental hazards, growing on other people's lands, there's been enough public upset about it that the Board of Supervisors put an initiative on the June 3rd ballot to repeal Measure G entirely and the whole concept of personal use of marijuana in Mendocino and roll back the county's limits for cultivation of medical marijuana in specific to just 6 plants, which is the statewide minimum. Most of the counties in Northern California have fairly liberal limits for cultivation of medical marijuana. And as I say, Mendocino did have has under Measure G a 25 plant limit. And so they want to roll it back. So this initiative is headed on the June 3rd ballot. It's really gotten quite a nasty fight up there, sort of the NIMBYs versus the yuppies and development interests. We really, looking for help in the Measure B campaign, any donations can be directed via our website at canormal.org or through the nomeasureb.org. Remember, Measure B is bad, and Measure G is good.
That's an easy way to remember it.
Yes.
So this is just in Mendocino County for the people voting
right,
up there in
Mendocino
June.
Mendocino County is part of the famous Emerald Triangle of growing counties in Northern California, and has been sort of a major source of underground growing for 30 years now.
Now this Measure G has been in effect for what, 8 years
since
now?
2000. Yeah.
Okay, so eight years.
And in the last two or three years, there's been an enormous upsurge in reported marijuana eradications, and not just in Mendocino. It's been statewide. In Mendocino, they're blaming it on Measure G, but it's actually part of a much wider phenomenon that's going on, which really, if you take a look at it, dates back to 2001 or so when the border got closed. From that point on, there's really been this upsurge in growing here in California. And you know, what I think has been going on, and a lot of us think is going on, is that people have decided that it's easier to grow here domestically or safer than to try to import it from Mexico or Canada.
Sure. That, when we try to stamp out the production in one location, all it does is move to another location.
Right.
Now, in some good news coming out of California, we go to the statewide assembly, and Assembly Bill 2279, which passed the Labor and Employment Committee by a 6-2 vote. Tell folks how that would help out our medical marijuana patients in California.
Yeah, well, this basically protects medical marijuana patients from discrimination via drug testing. At present, our medical marijuana law, Proposition 215, does not prevent employers from arbitrarily discriminating against people for positive drug tests, even if they have medical marijuana recommendations. This was challenged in the state Supreme Court earlier this year on an employment case involving a fellow named Gary Ross, who was denied employment at a communications company for testing positive for marijuana. He had a legitimate medical recommendation for a severe back problem. And the Supreme Court basically said that Proposition 215 didn't protect him. This bill would protect employees who did have medical marijuana recommendations from discrimination on drug tests. We're encouraged. It's gotten through the two assembly committees now. I think partly because there's public support for the notion, and especially I think because labor has been supporting it.
Yes, it's something that labor should definitely get behind. We're talking about the right to work for people based on their choice of medicine recommended by their doctor. It doesn't seem like we're firing anybody for any of their prescription medications. We shouldn't be firing them for their medical marijuana use.
Right. There is a crazy notion out there that the employers have that somehow the testing positive for marijuana implies that you are a bad employment risk, or that you're an unsafe worker or unfit for the job. But there's absolutely no scientific evidence for this. It's based on sheer social prejudice. It has as much scientific basis as discrimination against blacks and gays did in the past. It's a sort of chemical McCarthyism, we like to call it, drug testing. Given the lack of scientific basis, and given the fact that marijuana is very frequently a safer substitute for more dangerous prescription drugs and more addictive narcotics, it makes no sense at all to be discriminating against people who use marijuana for medicine.
So it's passed two committees. It's on its way to the assembly floor. How do the chances look out there in front of the full California assembly?
It's going to be tight. We'll see how it goes. I'm actually most worried about the governor because business groups are against this, because business always opposes things that restricts its their right to employ who they want to employ. But, you know, I'm cautious. We're hopeful that we can get this by, and people are encouraged, if they're from California in particular, to contact their assembly people and urge them to vote for 2279. It should be up for a vote this week, I expect. You can register there. You can contact your assemblyman via the California Normal website, canormal.org. Again.
That's right. Check out canormal.org. Get in touch with your assembly members. The voices of the people are what's going to motivate these politicians. They know that their jobs depend on our votes. So make your voice heard and talk to your assembly members. And while you're at it, I guess it wouldn't hurt to call Governor Schwarzenegger.
Well, yeah, it wouldn't hurt.
Well, Dale, it wouldn't hurt. That's it. We'll leave it at that, huh? Well, Dale Gehringer is the executive director of California Normal. Thanks for joining us again
okay,
on the Daily Audio Stash.
Okay.
Hi, this is Alan St. Pierre, executive director of Normal. We are the oldest, largest, and best-known marijuana law reform organization in America, and it's all because of your support. Take some time to join Normal at www.normal.org. Your membership supports this podcast, our websites, our policy research and analysis, and our annual conferences. Changing marijuana laws is a grassroots effort, and it starts with you, the stakeholder. Join Normal today and add your voice to the millions of cannabis consumers who demand equality with our beer-drinking friends.
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take the time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. Hey, Stashers, Radical Russ here. Welcome to Monday, May 12th, 2008, or as I like to call it, my youngest brother's 25th birthday. Yes, that cute, chubby little kid that I used to babysit is all grown up now. And as his oldest brother, it is my job to publicly embarrass, support my brother in all his endeavors. Josh is incredibly talented, and that's not just a proud big brother talking. He's soon to graduate Boise State University as a theater arts major. He's a gifted actor, director, and playwright, in addition to being a talented singer-songwriter and guitarist. To the best of my knowledge, Josh isn't a cannabis consumer, but as I was checking out his music on MySpace, I told him that someday he needed to write a song for me about weed so I could promote him on the Stash. Well, 2 days later, Josh knocked out a demo on his little four-track recorder. It's this cute disco-ish tune called Get Stoned Together, and he plays the guitar, the bass, and the cheesy keyboards, as well as programming the drum machine and singing all the vocals. It helps fill the gap left by the lack of marijuana love songs. I mean, there's lots of songs about loving weed, but few about loving someone by sharing weed. Anyway, enjoy the demo. Josh is moving here to Portland in the summer, and we'll be collaborating on this song and others. I play bass, and my cousin plays drums, and his mom has a great recording studio. We'll let you know when the finished product is ready. In the meantime, enjoy this demo of Get Stoned Together by Josh Belleville. You can get more of my brother's music at myspace.com/Josh Belleville and a download of this MP3 by visiting our site at stash.normal.org. This is my 25-year-old little brother, Josh Belleville, and Get Stoned Together.
this wall. And laugh with me at nothing at all. Tonight we're gonna have a ball. You and me, let's get stoned together. Whatever you feel, I'm gonna make it better. Wherever you go, whatever you do, I wanna spend my life getting stoned with you. Wherever you go, whatever you do, I wanna spend my life getting stoned with you. And this will sound crazy, baby, but I can't stop staring at your hair. Wherever you go, whatever you do, I wanna spend my life with you.
You call it, it's a huge part of popular culture.
Where'd you learn that, Cheech? Drug school.
You don't need weed school. You just need a copy of the new book, Pot Culture, the A to Z Guide to Stoner Language and Life.
Hey, this is great, man.
Even if you never smoked marijuana.
I never used marijuana. Sorry.
Don't think you smoked marijuana.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two and didn't inhale.
Or you used to smoke marijuana.
I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Pot Culture by former High Times editor Steve Bloom and Shirley Halperin will answer every question you ever had about marijuana culture.
Has that marijuana made it back up here yet?
Check out Pot Culture, the A to Z Guide to Stoner Language and Life at Amazon.com or visit PotCultureBook.com today.
Too bad, man. I just stopped smoking yesterday.
Across the continent now to the state of Rhode Island, where we're joined by Jesse Stout from the Rhode Island Patient Advocacy Coalition. Jesse, welcome back to the Daily Audio Stash.
Hi, thanks a lot, Russ.
Hey, we've got some bills in Rhode Island that we want to make sure everyone's aware of. Apparently there's a vote coming up Tuesday on Senate Bill 2693 there in Rhode Island. Why don't you tell our listeners what that bill would do for our patients in Rhode Island?
Well, Russ, this bill would allow the Department of Health to license nonprofit compassion centers to grow and distribute medical marijuana for patients.
Oh, that's great. So this has made it through the all the relevant Senate committees and now is just waiting a full vote from the Senate?
That's right. The Senate Health and Human Services Committee has already unanimously approved the bill.
Oh, great. And what do the chances look like in the Senate? Do you have a lot of co-sponsors or supporters there?
Yeah, that's right. I think that Senator Perry, our sponsor in the Senate, has been able to get a lot of great support from most of Rhode Island senators. So we're looking forward and hoping the bill will pass, hopefully even with the 60% supermajority that could become necessary to override a gubernatorial veto.
Well, that's an important point that we ought to bring up, too, is that your governor doesn't seem too friendly toward this bill.
No, he's been really our only really public opponent this session, and so we're afraid that he might veto if we pass in the Senate, and looking forward to having enough support to override that veto if necessary.
Well, that would be good. Now, on the House side, you've got a twin bill on that side that also needs some attention.
Yeah, that's right. Representative Tom Slater has introduced Twin Bill H7888, which would do the same, create a compassion center the same way. And if the Senate bill passes with flying colors tomorrow, then we'll be hoping for a House committee vote and House floor vote before the end of the session, too.
Wow, that's excellent. Now, what would this compassion center bill establish? What are some of the limits and some of the guidelines associated with these bills?
If the bill passes and becomes law, then within a year, Department of Health will issue a license to a nonprofit organization here in Rhode Island who will be able to serve as a primary caregiver for an unlimited number of patients. In other words, patients would be able to appoint the Compassion Center to grow and distribute marijuana for them. The Compassion Center could then possess as much marijuana and marijuana plants as all of those patients could possess.
Wow, that sounds like quite a large amount there. What are the current limits for possession for patients in Rhode Island?
Right now, Rhode Island patients can have 12 plants and 2.5 ounces, so that one compassion center could have the totals of all of those patients' plants and marijuana. And then if all goes well, the Compassion Center could open after a year, and then up to 2 more Compassion Center licenses would be granted after another year for a total statewide maximum of 3 Compassion Centers for patients to choose from.
So it's going to be rolled out pretty slowly then, one Compassion Center the first year and then the other 2 later?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this gives the public an opportunity to see these Compassion Centers in action and to realize that they have nothing to fear from the regulated distribution of cannabis to medical patients.
Exactly.
Well, how can the people of Rhode Island and others who are concerned about these bills, how can they help you out? Are there numbers to call or websites they can visit?
Yeah, well, Russ, I'd love for visitors here in Rhode Island to go over to our website, ripatients.org, and click a link near the top of our homepage that allows you to call or email your state senator to express your support for this legislation, and also pretty soon, we'll be updating those links for the House of Representatives, too, so you can let your representatives know that you support the bill in advance of that vote.
All right, everyone out there in Rhode Island, make sure you get on the phone and especially call your Senate today. They're going to be voting on this tomorrow, Tuesday, and we want to make sure to get as many votes as possible. If we can get that supermajority to override a potential governor's veto, that would be most excellent solution there. So, Jesse, thanks for joining us here from the Rhode Island Patients Advocacy Coalition. Check them out on the web at ripatients.org. We'll have a link for that up on our website at stash.normal.org as well. Thanks for being here, Jesse.
That's right, and thank you so much, Russ.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with another one of our cannabis quotes. This one from the LaGuardia Commission, the report that was commissioned in 1944 by the mayor of New York, Fiorello LaGuardia, which stated, quote, "Cannabis smoking does not lead directly to mental or physical deterioration. Those who have consumed marijuana for a period of years showed no mental or physical deterioration, which may be attributed to the drug," end quote. Yes, and it goes back farther than that. It goes back to the British East India study from 1894. We've known for over 100 years now that there are no appreciable societal harms from the smoking of marijuana by responsible adults. It's time to end adult marijuana prohibition now, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers.